There's a fight over that because there are several legislators for which, you know, who the courts have and the Supreme Court has determined are not legitimately seated there. So that's a fight, and they have to resolve that in some way.
Well, we want to thank you, Mark, and we're going to have you back next week to have a debate on Venezuela. Thanks so much for being with us, Mark Weisbrot. Well, on Saturday morning, I'll be at the New York Press Club's 2016 Journalism Conference at 9 a.m. at the NYU Kimmel Center. Check our website for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, and Andre Lewis. Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Paul Huckabee, our engineer. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
KBOO Portland. The time is 4:59 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
This Saturday, October 29th, KBOO is happy to co-sponsor the Enchanted Forest Halloween event with the Mother Earth School. The event will take place from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Jean's Farm, 3707 Southeast Johnson Creek Boulevard. It's recommended for kids ages 2 to 8. We must sign up in advance. More information can be found on the website MotherEarthSchool.org or on the right-hand side of the KBOO website, KBOO.FM, under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Follies, Portland's physical comedy showcase,
Sunday, November 6th at 8 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge in Portland.
Follies will highlight the richly diverse, artistic, and hilarious world of physical comedy, variety, and sketch comedy every first Sunday of the month.
This is a 21 and over event.
Again, that's Follies, Sunday, November 6th from 8 to 10 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge, 2432 Southeast 11th Avenue in Portland.
More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the League of Women Voters of Portland. For a preview of your candidates and the ballot measures on your personal ballot, you can enter your address at vote411.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, for the first time, the U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to hear a transgender rights case.
We speak to local Native American activist and multimedia journalist Chris Francisco on the front lines in Standing Rock.
And an Alaska attorney has accused Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas of sexual assault.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 28, 2016. I'm Linda Olson-Osterland.
And I'm Liam Delta. A multi-state militarized police unit forcibly moved indigenous pipeline opponents and their supporters in North Dakota Thursday. FSRN's Nell Abrams has more.
A multi-state militarized police cohort forcibly moved indigenous pipeline opponents and their supporters in North Dakota Thursday. Led by the Morton County Sheriff's Department, hundreds of police pushed protesters back from a roadblock and away from the recently established Winter Treaty Camp, arresting at least 141 people. Officers reportedly fired rubber bullets, beanbags, concussion grenades, and pepper spray as they removed people from what indigenous activists say is unceded native land under an 1851 treaty. Police say the land is privately owned by the pipeline company. Much of the standoff, including police use of a long-range audio device and riot batons on pipeline opponents, was captured in live streams broadcast throughout the day. But at a Thursday evening press conference, Morton County Sheriff Kyle Kirchmeier denied using any weapons other than pepper spray. Kirchmeier also said that there was just one injury, a small cut. But the Standing Rock Medic and Healers Council says they treated people on scene. One medic reports that two of his colleagues, clearly marked with red crosses, were arrested.
The medics who were driving our medic car, after we were struck and knocked off the back of the medic car, police advanced and, without even letting our medic driving, put her vehicle in park, pulled her out, and arrested her. One of our other medics was nearly struck by that vehicle while it was still moving because they pulled her out while without letting her stop the vehicle. And he was arrested. Both of those medics were arrested.
Standing Rock Sioux Chairman Dave Archambault issued a statement late Thursday reiterating the call for federal authorities to pay immediate and close attention to the situation and ensure the protection of First Amendment rights and the safety of thousands at Standing Rock. In an evening press conference, North Dakota Governor Jack Dalrymple called police action during the day-long events against the unarmed protesters well handled from start to finish. Native American resistance to the pipeline intensified after the original path that ran closer to Bismarck was rerouted because of water safety issues. The Standing Rock Sioux say they are fighting to protect their water as well as their sovereignty and that sacred land has already been destroyed. The mass arrests of frontline indigenous environmental activists came the same day that a federal court in Portland acquitted anti-government militant Amon Bundy and six others of charges related to their 41-day armed takeover of a national wildlife refuge in Oregon.
That was FSRN's Nell Abrams reporting.
Yesterday, National Guardsmen and police in riot gear fired beanbags and used pepper spray to push back activists protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline. As we stated, this was occurring at the same time that a Portland jury was in the process of acquitting the leaders of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge occupiers. Local Native American activist Chris Francisco has been on the front lines of the protest to halt the pipeline. KBOO's Ray Bodwell caught up with Chris, who gave an update on Standing Rock and shared his thoughts on the Bundys.
Chris, you were in the frontline camp when the confrontation with the police and the National Guard took place. Tell me what you saw.
Yesterday, they raided our camp, frontline camp. They came in with Hummers, Alrads, and real guns. They shot a horse. They just started tearing everything apart. You know, the TVs that were there, and they pushed people back out, and we tried to hold the line, but they pushed us all the way back over across this bridge. That's where they're slowly moving forward. Finally, towards the evening, they took over frontline camp. So all our stuff is in there. Everybody lost TVs. Vehicles that were left on the side of the road were impounded. And today we're trying to negotiate to get our stuff back.
And where exactly was the frontline camp?
North of the camp.
About how far north of the camp is it, Chris?
It's about about a mile. It's right next to where they desecrated the burial ground. That's where my tent was. They took everything. All my belongings are gone. And I don't have a tent no more. I'm on my sleeping bag, all my clothes. They're all gone, and I don't have anything. So I just kind of stayed with some friends last night.
So describe for me, if you can, Chris, what's the makeup of the police presence? Is part of it police and part of it military, or is it primary military? What does it look like to you?
They're bringing in other law enforcement from all over the country. I think I think Indiana brought some law enforcement and the military. The National Guard is there, and just the local police sheriff's department. They're all here, and most of the stuff they put on, don't believe what they say on the internet, because the people are getting hurt, people getting maced, and people are being roughed up. Even an elder trying to stand her ground, and they threw her in jail. And a lot of people are being held without bond. and so they're upping up the charges to felonies and stuff. So it's getting really bad now.
Yesterday, at about the same time that your forward camp was being pushed back, the jury here in Portland was acquitting the Bundys of the Malheur occupation. Has there been a feeling about that amongst the protesters in Standing Rock?
Yeah, it's all about white privilege, and that's what when we talk about white privilege, that's how they benefit from it. You know, they're praising their God, and here yesterday, our sweat lodges, our sacred sweat lodges, were dismantled, and people were having a sweat, were dragged out of there, and were handcuffed, and so it's still manifest destiny going on right now. We're still asking for warriors to come and help support. We don't. We're unarmed. We're not like the Bundys that had rifles, and we're unarmed. The only weapon we have is the prayer, and our ceremonies, and our songs, and our voices. That's all we have. We're not like the Bundys who had guns, and yet they were let go. They were acquitted. But that's just how it's going to be, I guess. With natives, we are still oppressed in our own homeland, but. But we're still standing. The one thing that happened that was real powerful is the buffaloes came out yesterday. You could see them coming over the horizon, coming running towards us. And the airplanes and the helicopters and the dune buggies chased them back. So that gave a lot of the people a lot of spirit. We all started yelling, some people were crying, and so it was pretty powerful. I think that gave us a lot of spirit to fight on, to keep holding them back.
For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
The Portland City Council moved Wednesday to give a $20,000 grant to the Portland Mercado to help pay for repairs from an attack of vandalism last weekend. The Mercado is a food cart pod, an economic development program, and social gathering spot built to help small business entrepreneurs. It was launched in 2010 by the Hacienda Community Development Corporation. The Mercado sustained an estimated $25,000 in damages to the food carts. They've been shut down for days without any income. Money and equipment were stolen. The Mercado has raised more than $15,000 to purchase a security camera system. The Portland Trailblazers supplied a matching grant of $5,000 to help the nonprofit. In a statement today, Mercado operators say they may not need the city's grant because of insurance and contributions already received. But the Mercado said that because other food carts nearby were damaged last weekend as well, they would try to find a way to support them with some of the grant if possible.
Willie Levinson and Human Access Project are holding an event this Sunday exploring efforts to reclaim the Seine River in Paris and how that movement connects with efforts to reclaim the Willamette River. Urban river access activist Pierre Mallet from Paris, who is working with a group called Experimental Laboratory of Urban Swimming. The event is part of the event. The event is at the Chaise Machan Bistro on Hawthorne Boulevard this Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. And it's called From Paris to Portland, Activating Our Urban Rivers. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with Levinson this afternoon about how the collaboration came about.
Well, Human Access Project, as I know you know, Lisa, all of your listeners may not know, our mission is to transform Portland's relationship with the Willamette River. And I'm actually very inspired by the simple phrase of Jacques Cousteau, people protect what they love. So we are going to have another French person visiting Portland. We actually connected on the internet on Facebook. It's actually an example of technology working for you for once. And we just were observing each other's work with my friend Pierre, working to activate the Seine River in Paris. And he has been observing the work that Human Access Project has been doing with activating the Willamette in Portland. And one thing led to another, and I said, you know, I'd come visit Portland sometime. He said, you know what? I am going to be visiting Portland in October. I said, okay, well, you'll be staying at my house. I'm going to host you. And one thing led to another, some volunteers on Human Access Project said, oh, I want to meet Pierre too. Please set something up. So we are having an event this Sunday from 4 to 6 at Chez Machan on Hawthorne, where I'll be doing a presentation on Human Access Project. Pierre will be doing a presentation on, Laboratory de Banya de Urbanas Experimentales. I mean, yeah.
Sorry.
French.
How did you do that?
Yeah. So, and, as French so charmingly said in his pretty good English, it will be an opportunity for us to share inspiration with each other. So he's my spiritual river brother from across the world, and I'm really excited to host him this weekend and be able to share my coveted friend with other people who care about activating rivers like I do.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
Multnomah County prosecutors are filing for more severe sentencing against Russell Cortier. In August, the 38-year-old chased Larnell Bruce with his Jeep and killed the African-American teenager in Gresham. Cortier was re-indicted with additional hate crimes after it was revealed that he was a member of the white supremacist prison gang, the European Kindred. Last week, prosecutors submitted notification that they're seeking sentencing beyond state guidelines based on aggravated circumstances. The notification cites Cortier's lengthy history of violent crime, gang involvement, racism, and repeated offenses during state supervision. The prosecution also states that Cortier shows a low probability of rehabilitation. While Cortier was on supervised release after attacking a female stranger with a knife at a Max stop, he beat a veteran unconscious with a pool ball in a Gresham bar. Cortier served 12 days in jail for this incident, about a year before he killed Bruce. The trial is scheduled for the summer of 2017.
The Oregon Department of Agriculture has concluded that no further pesticide spraying is necessary next year to keep the gypsy moss from spreading through our local greenery. The spraying was started earlier this year after 3 Asian and 2 European gypsy moths were found in traps. Local residents worried that the state spraying program would harm bees, but officials used a biological agent known as BTK, which is not believed to impact bees. This year, 8,800 acres were sprayed in the Portland area. The areas targeted were St. John's, Forest Park, and Hayden Island. No moths were found in the 19,000 traps after the spraying occurred. State officials say early detection and pesticide treatment results in a lower amount of total pesticides used if the populations increase and spread.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for the State of Cannabis at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Tomorrow's weather, periods of rain with temperatures in the low 60s. East of the Cascades, similar conditions with temperatures in the high 50s. On this date in 1886, President Grover Cleveland dedicated the Statue of Liberty. The statue was a gift to the U.S. from the citizens of France. The inscription on the statue's base reads, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door."
Hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. American working people will elect the next president of the United States on November 8th. The AFL-CIO is the largest labor federation in the country, and it's backing Hillary Clinton for president. Rich Trumka is president of the AFL-CIO. Generations of Trumka's family were coal miners in Pennsylvania. Workers and their unions don't get the mass media attention lavished on the billionaire candidate for president, so Trumka would like to say a few things to working people voting in this presidential election.
My family spent three generations in the coal mines of Pennsylvania. I know the feeling of setback and struggle, and I understand those who are skeptical about our institutions of power. And I share the frustration of every working person who busts their butt only to fall further behind. It's us, America's working people, who will get our country back on track. But we can't do it alone. We need a president who will empower us to reach our full potential. I believe with every fiber of my being that Hillary Clinton is the woman for the job.
Trumka says when it comes to the economy, jobs, and your right to join unions and to collectively bargain for better lives with your boss, Clinton is far better for your family than the billionaire candidate who, as President Obama says, spent 70 years on this earth never caring at all about working people.
Some working class voters are distrustful of politicians who've been around for multiple terms, let alone decades. And they truly believe no one in power is listening to them. But those of us who know Hillary Clinton can tell you she is listening. She put forward the most aggressive plan for infrastructure since World War II, to the tune of millions of good new jobs. She'll reinvest in urban America to create jobs and opportunities. And she'll make sure workers can form and join unions freely and fairly.
Brought to you by the Alliance for American Manufacturing, working to prevent the loss of American jobs caused by unfair foreign competition, and working to promote fair trade laws to level the playing field for American workers. Information on how you can help create smart, worker-focused public policy is online at AmericanManufacturing.org. Brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield National Labor Office, empowering working Americans with stable health coverage for over 50 years. The National Labor Office is committed to remaining the top choice for the 17 million union workers, retirees, and families they serve. Online at bcbs.com/NLO.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Anita Hill has publicly come out in support of an Alaska attorney who alleges that U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas quoted, quote, repeatedly groped her at a party 16 years ago. Moira Smith, 24 years old at the time, is now vice president and general counsel of NSTAR Natural Gas Company in Alaska. She says she was asked to help set the table at a dinner party at which Thomas was a guest. And as she did that, Thomas groped her rear end and suggested they should sit next to each other. Smith says she was moved to go public with her allegation after watching the 2005 Access Hollywood video, in which Donald Trump jokes about sexually molesting women. Thomas denies the allegations, which were first reported by the National Law Journal. Claims of sexual harassment by Thomas were first raised during his Supreme Court confirmation hearings in 1991. Hill publicly alleged that Thomas had sexually harassed her, but Thomas was confirmed anyway. Hill is now a Brandeis University professor. She said this week she feels the new accusations against Thomas should be investigated.
It seems that politicians are increasingly being called out on the national stage for the way they speak about women and people of color. U.S. Representative Tammy Duckworth is one of the few women of color in the House of Representatives. She's also an Iraq war veteran who flew helicopters and earned the Purple Heart Medal after losing both legs in the war. She is now running for the U.S. Senate in her home state of Illinois. Her opponent, Republican Senator Mark Kirk, made a comment some critics are calling, quote, birtherist.
My family has served this nation in uniform, going back to the Revolution. I'm a daughter of the American Revolution. I've bled for this nation. But I still want to be there in the Senate when the drums of war sound, because people are quick to sound the drums of war, and I want to be there to say, this is what it costs. This is what you're asking us to do. And if that's the case, I'll go. Families like mine are the ones that bleed first.
I had forgotten that your parents came all the way from Thailand to serve George Washington.
You're welcome to take some time if you want to respond to that, too.
Sure. There's been members of my family serving in uniform on my father's side going back to the Revolution. I belong to the William J. Penny chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution.
That was the Representative Tammy Duckworth debating incumbent U.S. Senator Mark Kirk. Polls currently show Kirk badly losing in the race.
Today, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to hear a transgender rights case, which could determine whether schools must let students use bathrooms based on their gender identity. The case in question involves a Virginia public high school, or rather a Virginia public school district, which is trying to prevent a female-born transgender from using the boys' bathroom. A lower court ruled in favor of the student last year, but the high court issued a stay pending an appeal from the local school board. 17-year-old Gavin Grimm transitioned in 2014 and legally changed his name at that time. The Gloucester County School Board had initially approved Grimm's request to use the boys' bathroom, but reversed themselves after members of the community protested. They then barred him from the boys' room, but offered him the use of a newly constructed single-stall bathroom. Grimm found this offer unacceptable, and a lawsuit was filed on his behalf. This is the first time the court has agreed to review this question, and many are predicting that the shorthanded court will produce a 4-4 tie.
French officials have revealed that hundreds of African refugee children at a notorious refugee camp in Calais cannot be accounted for in the wake of the camp sweep carried out October 24th by the government. The camp, which has existed for many years, is commonly called the jungle. Thousands of people stayed there while waiting to enter England for asylum. The British Red Cross says kids as young as 12 years old have been sleeping outside in the ruins of the burned-out camp, and that many of them were on the list to be accepted into the United Kingdom. The Red Cross says the British Home Office failed to make sure they had all the children in the buses that had been chartered to take them to England. Officials say the unaccompanied youths are vulnerable to crime and have nothing to eat or any safe place to stay. Refugee Support Director Alex Fraser told The Guardian today, quote, "Many of the children who remain in Calais have a legal right to come to the UK, but there is now a real risk some will disappear when they should have been brought to safety," end quote. In related news, it appears many of the refugees swept from the jungle have now set up tents in the streets of Paris.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is calling for an investigation into an airstrike in Syria's Idlib province. It reportedly killed 22 children and 6 teachers at a school there on Wednesday. FSRN reports.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is calling for an investigation into an airstrike in Syria's Idlib province that reportedly killed 22 children and 6 teachers at a school there Wednesday. The UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights attributed the attack to Russian forces, a charge Russia denies. Syria's military acknowledged airstrikes Wednesday in the rebel-held region, without mentioning a school. UNICEF's executive director said the airstrike, quote, "may be the deadliest attack on a school since the war began more than 5 years ago." The same day as the airstrike, an exasperated UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs, Stephen O'Brien, spoke to a meeting of the UN Security Council pleading for action.
"Each month I have come before you and presented an ever-worsening record of destruction and atrocity, grimly cataloguing the systematic destruction of a country and its people. While my job is to relay to you the facts, I cannot help but be incandescent with rage. Month after month, worse and worse, and nothing is actually happening to stop the war, stop the suffering. This council has been charged with the responsibility for ending this horror. The buck stops with you."
On Thursday, Syrian authorities said rebel shells had hit a school in western Aleppo, killing 3 children at a government-run facility. UN observers have warned the ongoing fighting in divided Aleppo may destroy one of the world's oldest cities by Christmas.
Pirates may be taking over Iceland, but they won't be using swords. Iceland's general election is scheduled for tomorrow, and the Pirate Party is leading in pre-election polls. The party was formed in 2012 in the wake of Iceland's economic meltdown and numerous disclosures of government corruption. The pirates are led by Birgitte Jansdotter, a former WikiLeaks activist and computer programmer. Their core values include the promotion of civil rights and gender transparency from commercial interests. Let me restate that. I read that incorrectly. Their core values include the promotion of civil rights and greater transparency from commercial interests. A key goal is the development of a fully participatory democracy via the internet in Iceland, a nation of approximately 300,000 members. Support for the movement skyrocketed earlier this year after the Panama Papers revealed that former Prime Minister Sigmundur Gunnlaugsson held investments in offshore accounts. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Demi Hellenius and Stacey Holtman. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News and Christopher Francisco. Our engineer is Ian Gadberry. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Liam Delta. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, Celeste and Cecil speak with the Reverend Dr. Otis Moss III, Reverend Dr. T. Allen Bethel, and pastor and activist E.D. Mondane Jr. about the upcoming 2016 Collins Lecture, Redeeming the Soul of America, Race,